This is the LCJ Q&A podcast. I'm Lights Camera Jackson. Thank you for listening. Big new animated movie coming to Netflix this Wednesday, April 22nd. It is The Willoughbys. Joining me right now is director Chris Perrin. He was on the LCJ Q&A talking about Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2 back in 2013. He's back right now. Chris, welcome back to the LCJ Q&A.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Nice to be here.
Great. You know, you're in an interesting position right now, Chris, because you and everybody who made the movie and Netflix are putting out one of the big new pieces of animation content for families to enjoy during this crazy, unpredictable time. Has that thought kind of sunk in yet?
Yes and no. I mean, you know, when you start a film 5 years out, you don't think about what it's going to look like on the release. Or, you know, we all have families and we're all worried about the people we love in this time. So it's sort of hard to square that circle. I think ultimately I'm thankful that the hard work and that the all the efforts put in by the crew, you know, will have access to an audience. And I really hope it makes people happy out in the world. And, you know, ultimately I think the timing is something that we just can't predict, but you know, I'm social isolating, so there's lots of time to sort of sit around and think about this stuff. I think it's a very strange time. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, this movie is whimsical and it's wild and it's fun and quite a cast. We're going to get into all of it here. I think families are really going to enjoy this. Netflix, April 22. Let's start with, you did Cloudy 2 in 2013, and so you said 5 years out. So how soon after Cloudy 2 did you really get underway and read the Lois Lowry book and get into this?
It was about 2016. So after Cloudy finished, I bounced around, worked on a couple of different projects, and I was working on a Star Wars project in Los Angeles when the producer, Luke Carroll, had breakfast with me, and he gave me the book and said, give this a read and let me know what you think. So it was really around 2016 that the seed got planted. And, you know, long road to get to where we are today, but that's the way these things get made.
Yeah, sure. Did you work with Lois Lowry on bringing this to life and crafting this in such a special way?
Not really. I mean, I think the kind of gap that happens between, you know, the way a book is consumed and the way a movie is consumed, you kind of have to step back from the source material. Hmm. So definitely went through an internal process where, you know, the early drafts of the script really hung on to the book. And as we started to sort of play with, I think the root of her story that I loved, it was it made fun of children's literature, and made fun of it in a way that was sort of a love story to it. So it was subversive, but also caring about the source material. And so as we pivoted from children's literature to children's film entertainment, it sort of led us into slightly different directions. And, you know, as the audience consumes it in a different way, we have to find, you know, our own sort of pace and our own rhythm through that storytelling. So ultimately, when we were closer to the end of the process, we began sharing a lot of the film with her, and she was always supportive. And I think one of the things that was really, really great over the four-year journey was after every screening, I always kind of went back and reread the book. And that helped me sort of, I think, hang on to hopefully the integrity of what the source material was trying to provide.
Sure. Yeah, the nods to children's film entertainment so evident in the film, but you have your own rhythm and style to it as well, absolutely. But I love the fact that parts of it feel like Willy Wonka and parts of it feel like Lemony Snicket. And of course, Gene Wilder and Jim Carrey are two of the all-time comedy greats. Did they and those scenes in those movies sort of lend themselves as inspiration to how the comedy is executed in The Willoughbys?
Yeah, I mean, I think being a kid growing up in Canada, I grew up on a lot of sketch comedy. So whether it's like Kids in the Hall or SCTV, like, you know, the fact that I got to work with Martin Short on this movie is just a dream come true because, you know, I grew up with him. And so that sort of physical comedy that comes from, I think, character-driven, you know, foibles and you know, just like, I love the idea of like biting down on the nerve of what makes a character funny. So with Tim, he's a kid trying to be an adult. So there is an arrogance there that he can't carry. And that sort of takes us into all sorts of reference points from, you know, John Cleese in Fawlty Towers. He was a huge reference point for Tim to, you know, a lot of the Jim Carrey stuff. We really watched, you know, the Ace Ventura movies for the physicality of how he was always trying to be really, like, tough and stoic, but then he had this sort of ragdoll quality whenever he lost his confidence or got tossed around. And, you know, all of that is definitely referenced in how we built the character's movement and voices.
Yeah, this movie's visual wonder. I mean, it's fast, it's zany. There's so much energy and pacing to this. I mean, was it challenging at times to go along with the rhythm of this and to get everything just right, because it moves and moves and moves?
Yeah, it's a tricky thing because, you know, animation's such a backwards process. Like, you don't ever have a moment where you have a set and all your actors on stage and the lighting and you get it all in one go. Mm-hmm. One of the things that really sort of like came early in the film for me was the fact that it was a collision between a sitcom and a movie, because, you know, the design of the film, the characters are stuck for the first half of the film in this house. And so I really wanted to shoot it practical. I was watching a lot of All in the Family and like kind of Seinfeld and just like really trying to steep in that rat-a-tat of like Arrested Development, of how fast dialogue goes in those kind of classic three camera sitcom setups. And so one of the challenges was trying to keep that rat-a-tat up, but at the same time give space for the film to have those movie moments. And so hopefully, you know, when the audience watches it, like that push and pull comes forward, that there's almost two rhythms in the story.
As I mentioned in my rapid review of the movie, it is unique in tone and style and execution compared to a lot of other animated films released in the last 5-10 years. I mean, you are shaking up the rules and changing up the rules when it comes to making animated films based on how we see it in the Willoughbys. Was that one of the goals going in, or did that just sort of happen along the way as you were making this?
I don't know if it's the goal, but I think it's always something that we challenge ourselves with. As I say, we as most filmmakers. I know every movie I've worked on, like, one of the things that I've appreciated about my weird career is that they're very different. Like, from Shaun the Sheep to Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Like I think when you look at what a story can offer an audience, it's important to stand back and say, how do I deliver it in a way that's original? Mm-hmm. And I think in trying to be original, you don't want to alienate the audience. So that's the juggle. It's like trying to find something that feels organic to the source material without it being forced. And I think it took us a few years to get there on the Willoughbys, but ultimately the pace and the rhythm and the design and the comedy all comes from a really honest place of us discovering. It's a bit like slow motion stand-up, to be honest with you. Like, I think every time we had a screening, whether it was in storyboards or early animatics with digital assets, like, I was always trying to respond to the audience in a way that allowed the film to be entertaining, but also I wasn't just trying to make something that you recognize. I wanted to make it feel like it was coming from these characters. And so I think owning that is where the originality comes from. It's not, it wasn't like trying to be subversive for the sake of being subversive. I think it was trying to make the movie work for what the content was. And it's a weird story. So when you start with a weird story, you have to kind of go to some weird places to get it to work.
Chris Pearn, my guest right now in the LCJ Q&A, director of The Willoughbys. You have such a big cast. When it comes to Martin Short and Jane Krakowski, who voiced the parents, were they together in the voice booth doing their lines?
No, I wish they were. I mean, weirdly enough, they kind of, in that it worked out that we got Martin first in like the couple of records that we did with them. And so I would play Martin, and we would put pauses in, and Jane would react to him. but he was kind of there in a canned way. First time I worked with Martin, he was up in Northern Ontario, so we went to this hotel, and the engineer built this little pillow fort out of mattresses and blankets, and he went into this pillow fort, and he just came up with the character in a way that I'd never seen before. He's such a weird, wonderful man, and so when we played that for Jane, she just got all of these ideas and started to riff with somebody who's not in the room. It was incredible. But I mean, they're comedy geniuses, and they've worked together before. So I think part of the casting was trying to find that pairing of people who kind of go well.
Yeah, they are different parents than you see in normal animated movies, and maybe not so likable as well, but you got them in there. Ricky Gervais, wow. He's an executive producer on the film, and he voices the cat. And he's obviously one of the funniest guys in the business as well. When he came on board, was it an automatic I'm the EP and the cat, or how did that really go?
He was actually there before I was, so he was one of the things that sort of made the project very attractive to me. In a really honest way, I've always loved his comedy after like the first season of The Office. Like I find him to be such a genius in how he subverts what we expect. And so, he was already attached, and the idea of making him a cat really came organically from looking at his tone and the way that Ricky talks, and if you've ever seen his stand-up, how his mind kind of wanders and comes back to things. I think the other thing is, like, you almost don't want Ricky to not be Ricky. So being the straight man in the movie allowed us to keep him very honest to what his what his tone is and what his voice could bring to the table. So and he was very supportive of the entire process. So like anytime we needed him, anytime we had questions, anytime I was unsure about the comedy, I would send it to him. He helped us with this teaser, and you know, a lot of what is in the movie was really the last pass when we were almost finished, and we just sort of did a run through the film, and he just commented on it. It was amazing. It was like watching a stand-up show live in the booth. It was incredible.
And the cat is an interesting character, maybe one of the most dynamic in the movie, because without giving too much away, the cat has the power to change the course of the story. And for me, those are some of the most surprising moments of the film.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I really wanted to play with was, the tropes and the sort of, archetypes of filmmaking. So every character in the story, from the narrator to the bit players that the kids collide with along the way, they all represent an archetype and a trope, and then hopefully the audience picks up on how we bend that trope. Because I one of the things I was really passionate about is I didn't want the movie to feel like parody. I wanted it to have that a little bit of that comfort that parody brings to the table, but then ultimately becomes its own story. So each character kind of has that movement, and the narrator starts off as sort of an observer of the world, and at the end he becomes, really part of the theme. Mm. So that was a really fun challenge to try to figure out how to weave through the film.
I think you're very successful with that. And the kids, voiced by Will Forte, he voices Tim. You reunite with him after Cloudy 2. And Alessia Cara voices Jane. She's a huge pop star. This is kind of one of her first big acting roles. What made her write to voice Jane?
There's a lot of kismet, I think. We were looking for a casting on that character. And at the time, the idea of her being a musical character was already seeded. We'd been playing with it in our kind of working sessions in our writers' rooms. One of the crew members, one of our editors, was watching Fallon, and Alessia Cara was on the show, and she was like, he was doing a Predict the Future thing, and she's like, I want to be in an animated movie. Right. And so the fact that she was Canadian, the fact that she was a singer, and her voice, like when you watch her like in that episode of Fallon, like she's so funny and her timing is so good. I got really excited about the idea of like, what if she would say yes? And so we reached out, and right away she signed on. And the first time in the booth, it was a bit like, I hope this person, can act, because, loving her voice and loving how she talks in a conversational way, like it's different when you're on a mic. And oh my gosh, was she ever game? Like she just found the funny in the character. And really, Jane, I think there's an honesty in how she approaches it, because as a kid from Toronto, she's got this sort of, you know, Canadian underpinning of niceness that's sort of subversive in its own way, because, you know, Canadians are nice, but they're not really nice. And so Jane could be that, like, annoying little sister that was constantly driving Tim to points of frustration. And so the comedy of, like, having Jane as sort of the irritating but lovable foil for Forte's straight man, that really started to show itself very quickly. And I don't want to say it's a happy accident, because there were so many talented people involved, but it was a leap of faith at the beginning that just paid off, because I think she's my favorite character in the movie.
Yeah, that's such a great story. Dream come true for her to be in an animated movie. That's so cool. So, Chris, you know, you said you spent the last 4 or 5 years working on The Willoughbys. Is there another animation project you have in mind that you could potentially spend the next 4 to 5 years on?
I hope. I grew up on a farm, so everything's farming metaphors for me. But I think it's like you put some seeds in the ground and you hope that good stuff comes up. I love the medium. I think it's important to tell stories, and, you know, in the times we're in now, but in all times. So, you know, you just hope that you find the right one and that you can get excited about it, because it's a journey. Good year marriage.
Yeah. Well, good things have definitely come up when it comes to The Willoughbys. It's going to be a big hit for families, for Netflix. It's on Netflix this Wednesday, April 22nd, Earth Day. Gather around your TV, your laptop, your phone, and watch The Willoughbys. Chris Perrin, congratulations on this, and thanks for being here on the LCJ Q&A.
Thanks for having me, Jackson. Take care, eh?
Yeah, you too. I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. For more, go to lights-camera-jackson.com, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And we'll be back soon for more of the LCJ Q&A.